volunteer and apprenticeship program as well. Actually a great programmer on KPFA, too.
Excellent.
We love you, Sonia.
Elizabeth Berry in Santa Clara, Jessica Roman and Casadero. Go, Cas. Joan Healy in Sunnyvale, Gail Dube in San Francisco, Veronica Lodger, or I may be pronouncing that wrong, in Berkeley, thank you so much. Neil Edwards in Larkspur, all called 1-800-439-5732. Two open lines. If you were calling earlier and got a busy signal, you can get in right now at 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-KPFA.
And we'd like for you to call. We haven't gotten the word yet that we have made the second match, although the lines lighting up looks like we might be close to making it. Please do call. We have at least two open lines at 1-800-439-5732. 848-5732, kpfa.org, where you can pledge securely online and get any of the things that we've offered throughout the KPFA Fund Drive. We want the thumbs up from our phone
line. One open line.
Please
give
us a call.
1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. Chef MD's Big Book of Culinary Medicine for $125 to KPFA. Healing Cancer from the Inside Out, the award-winning two-hour DVD, yours for $100 to KPFA. The two of them together for $200 to KPFA. And we've got at least four open lines at 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-KPFA.
And we really appreciate, again, Chris, everything that people have done for us throughout the KPFA Fund Drive.
Sure,
and they're doing it again today, which is so great for us as we try to raise the funds to keep KPFA on the air. This is what community radio is all about. We could not exist without you, and you are the ones that allow what you hear on KPFA to be heard and the voices that you hear on KPFA and sell them anywhere.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, yes, today is our last Visionary Activist Fund Drive moment. So, more than perfectly, we say, well, Halloween comes early this year, what with the VP debate tonight and all. You know, many of us are have been working away and different to clear away the falsity illusion of glamour so that all may be revealed. You know, and when anyone attempts to lie, may the words become, it's working pretty well so far, we say, and cahoots and shout-out to all teammates working on that. So, yes, it is the moon in Scorpio, Venus in Scorpio. It draws our attention to the underworld invisible realm, which is so crucial, the backstage realm, which is so crucial to onstage. So, perfectly, we are welcoming back my favorite medicine man, Paul Stamets, human agent from the fungi realm, fellow animist, to remind us that all of nature is willing to cooperate with us delinquent humans to solve the crises we have created. His website is fungi.com. So welcome, Paul.
Oh, thank you, Carolyn. Honored to be here.
Oh, that's wonderful. So we're getting ready for, well, the debate tonight, and you're having a party. That's really great. I wish I could be there. And we're also getting ready for Bioneers, which we will be pitching. You'll be doing a plenary, which is always packed. I mean, you are a rock star these days.
Hard to imagine. There's so many other mycologists that are, frankly, more knowledgeable than me in other areas, but I focus on a certain portion of the kingdom of fungi, and there's been lots of exciting results lately.
And might we call it the kingdom of fungi?
Well, actually, there's a new super kingdom called Apisplicanta that has joined Animalia and fungi together. So we are actually in the same kingdom, supra. And because we exhale carbon dioxide and so do fungi, we inhale oxygen, so do fungi, and we're more closely related to fungi than we are to any other kingdom, splitting from fungi about 650 million years ago.
Yes. Well, let's also, we're going to be offering, we'll just do a brief pitch at the beginning and then actually have a real cavorting show. But let me remind our teammates that we are offering some fantastic things from Paul's magic backpack, and we'll let him describe those in a moment. We are still offering two pairs of tickets to each of my pre-election juju events. One is an open secret bookstore in San Rafael with great songstress Jane DeClear. That's October 16th, Thursday night, right after radio, 7 p.m. for a pledge of $200. And two pairs of tickets to my Bioneers talk at VMA. They're doing the whole auditorium at the Marin Civic Center. That's Saturday, October 18th, beginning at 8.03 p.m. because I'm quirky. That is Restoring the Waters of Life to Democracy with Emma Taylor Gaston, and that's for a pledge of $250 for a pair of tickets. And you can pledge by calling 1-800-HEY-KPFA or 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732 or online kpfa.org. And then I have a list of very fun things. One, we're certainly going to be offering your Paul Samets' book, Mycelium Running, and I realize I have the new edition here, but you guys can get the new edition, pledging. And then you've offered some just little enticements, only one of each, but let me go through them. One bag of mutrooms. Okay, what's that, Paul?
Woof.
Oh, yes, woof, woof, woof.
We have several dogs, and we've been feeding our dogs mushroom mycelium for over 20 years. And so lots of vets and customers have been asking us for them, and Dr. Andrew Wild, you know, gave his dogs for many years our mushroom mycelium. And then a person approached me who was an expert in dog food and said, let's come up with a dog treat. And so it's really Kurt Gibson's inspiration combined with my talents, and so we came up with mutrooms, which dogs really, really do love. So do alpacas and lots of other animals, including cats. But dogs definitely are the main focus.
That's great. Okay, so we're offering one bag of mutrooms for your favorite dog. And just as a footnote, yes, I have important dogs. So what were the mycelia you were feeding your doggies? And is it good for, like, arthritis and...
Well, you know, I'm very much restricted and self-centered on making any type of medical claims.
Right.
The mushrooms that are listed within the mushrooms have a long history in the scientific literature of showing immunopotentiating properties, anti-arthritic properties, and have antioxidants. And so we believe that these are precursor substances for enhancing the immune system. And it goes back thousands and thousands of years, so these have been very well tested. They're very safe. And something that I consume myself. I mean, I actually don't eat the mushrooms directly. I have. they do taste good.
I think I did. The bag I had that you gave me at the Green Festival, it's like, not bad. It's a yummy cracker. Certainly the dogs went crazy for it. So we're offering one bag of those. Again, if you call 1-800-439-5732, they will tell you how much, for a pledge of how much that you can get those. And then my favorite, one of my favorite products in the world, Paul's also offering only one, you lucky person out there, one bottle of 1 ounce Host Defense for Travelers in cinnamon or mint. I prefer cinnamon myself, but I can rave about this, but can you explain to our teammates what this is too?
Well, it's a five-species blend of fungi, all polypores. These are hard wood conks that grow in the forest, and we grow the mycelium in a clean laboratory. And each of these species are notable because of recent research that supports their efficacy at preventing viral reproduction. And now we have not done clinical studies. These are some of the best in vitro studies that science has created, and they have passed the test. We are actually navigating towards a clinical study here shortly. And, you know, my work in the scientific field in this subject matter is extensive. But again, I am going to be self-censored because
yep.
I'm just not really good at promoting my business. I'm much more interested in promoting the science, and the business comes secondarily. So you're kind of catching me in a little awkward position.
I know. We'll run through this, and I'm happy to step in with the purely anecdotal, which is what I run on. But this product is Host Defense for Travelers. Everybody I know, you know, and certainly in Washington, D.C., got really sick last winter, but not me. I just left it on the steps, and every time I went downstairs or upstairs, I went, and certainly on planes, oh, my God. So that's there's one bottle, and you can call 1-800-439-5732 to find out how much that is for the pledge. Only one. And then this, I don't know what this is, one Host Defense 60 CT capsule subscription, 12 units. You know, that costs a lot of money, but you're, bless your heart, you're donating it. What is that?
The Host Defense Blend is the most popular nutraceutical medicinal mushroom product in the country. It's been sold in stores for the past 5 years. We're offering it for the first time as a subscription service that people can get via mail order. So it's heavily discounted, and it has a blend of 16 different medicinal mushroom species, all of which, again, have been individually studied for their immune-enhancing and other health-benefiting effects. And the blending of these, we have in vitro results showing that a combination of these is much more powerful than one by itself. Mushrooms are great molecular magicians, and they have this unique molecular architecture of literally thousands of novel compounds, heretofore undiscovered by science. And as you break down each mushroom species into its individual constituents, not surprisingly, you lose much of its efficacy. And we're born from nature, and through our engagement with these fungi, our bodies are able to absorb those nutrients selectively. And with these mushroom compounds that are present within this constellation of species, there are many, many very exciting new molecules that are being unearthed, in a sense. And this is leading to an increasing amount of excitement throughout the scientific community. And I've been involved with the BioShield program of the U.S. Defense Department for the past 5 years. And some of these species that we have gathered out of the old growth forest are proving to be very interesting in their targeted activities. And so we built this blend, in a sense, from my intuition and from what limited research was available years ago. But my intuition lately has been right on, and we are excited about this product from our business point of view. And this is something also that's being navigated towards clinical studies.
So, yeah, because actually our blessed, wonderful ally, Andrew Weil, wrote the foreword to Mycelium Running, How Mushrooms Can Save the World, in which he said, you know, this is one of the memes that is way out there. I mean, I hear lots of people talking about it, which is, therefore, protecting old-growth forests is a question of national defense, because they are offering these new medicines which could help HIV/AIDS and could help, I mean, immeasurable things. That is so fabulous. Do you want to just say a little more about, yes, protecting old-growth forests as a measure of national defense? And
well, there's a vetted press release by DOD. If you search my name, Samus, and smallpox, there's also a national public radio interview with myself and the representative of the BioShield program, as well as the former deputy assistant director of the FDA, John Norris, who founded the Bioterrorism Institute. And we sent over 400 samples to the BioShield program, which has been subbed to different laboratories who have specialties. And about 4 years ago, we found that this one particular mushroom called agaricon, the Latin binomial is called Fomitopsis officinalis, and agaricon has been used by humans for over 2,000 years, first described by Dioscorides in 65 AD as a treatment against consumption in Greece. And but now it is thought to be extinct in Europe. It only grows in the old-growth forests of Northern California, Washington, Oregon, and British Columbia.
Huh.
A few other places, and we found it to be extremely target-specifically active against pox viruses, including smallpox, and more recently against flu viruses. And so, and even more recently than that, we've been working with Dr. Scott Franzblau at the University of Illinois Tuberculosis Research Center, and he has surveyed literally thousands, if not tens of thousands, of medicinal plants and other substances to try to fight what is increasingly becoming a near pandemic of these five drug resistant tuberculosis strains that sort of bred out of the gulags of Russia and is very much on the spread in Eastern Europe and now coming to the United States. And we have now 14 strains of agaricon in culture from over 20 years of going into the old growth forest and finding these rare conchs. I didn't find them. I found three in 20 years. In the past 6 months, I found five. So I seem to be zooming in on these.
Or they're zooming in on you.
Yeah, something's happening. That's hard to, you know, linear thinking and logic does not prevail anymore. It seems in my life it's just these quantum leaps And so with Scott's research, we found all the strains were active against tuberculosis, and several of them were hyperactively powerful against tuberculosis. And so having a fungus that is dually active against viruses and bacteria is medically significant. Most people may not realize that the 1918 pandemic, the flu pandemic that killed more than 50 million people, actually was a form of bird flu, it's an H1N1, but most people died from bacterial infestation in their lungs after the virus scarred their lungs. And so the secondary infection is what killed most people. So having something that is dually active against viruses and bacteria and has a multi-thousand year history of use strongly suggests and brings it to the forefront as a candidate for further study.
That's so great. And also, what was it that Utsi, the Alps guy, was carrying in his little pouch?
He had two polypores with him, actually two birch polypores, and one is, the problem with common names is that one common name can have lots of species umbrellas underneath it. So the old name for several thousand years is called Amadou. An Amadou was a fire starter wood conch that grows on birch, and it actually enabled humans to migrate out of Africa. And when we went into Europe several hundred thousand years ago, we discovered something new called winter. And if your clan could not keep fire alive, the clan would likely perish in the wintertime. And so this mushroom enabled for the portability of fire. And so the Iceman had tethered to his right side two forms of Amadou, and then he had another birch polypore called Pithoporus betulinus. Betulinus means birch. And that one also has been proven now to be very, very effective against intestinal parasites. And so the Iceman, part of his essential armamentarium when he went into the wilderness, he was equipped with these fungi. And if he knew about this, I mean, there had to be a resident shaman mycologist, probably a woman, by the way. I have another reason for saying that. Who was very, very skilled in the art of mushroom magic and then helped pass this knowledge on. But he had his knife, he had his bow, he had a rudimentary backpack, and he had, you know, these wood conchs tethered to his right side, which is a place of honor for us right-handers. You know, we keep our most important tools on our right side, but he wanted to make sure they were kept safe. And that enabled our ancestors to migrate and to keep fire alive for days. We didn't have Bic lighters, we didn't have, you know, and making a flint spark, you know, work, you know, under wet conditions is difficult. So
with the Amadou, you'd actually carry the coals of the fire.
Yeah, you have to cool it and carry it, and then you have to uncork it, so to speak, and blow into it to keep it aflamed. It used to be that the fire keepers of clans were incredibly important status and an individual, and now they're more or less symbolic. But at one time in our evolution of human history, they were the most important, if not the next to the most important people, you know, leading the clan.
Well, let's go back to probably a woman mushroom magic. I mean, I like to, again, we're entering into this realm of pragmatic mysticism, applying everything as increasingly crucial. So magic, we would say, is just really, in a sense, cooperating with everything, which is part of your middle name. But when you say probably a woman mushroom magic, yes, say more. Why probably woman?
Well, I mean, there's some natural differences that we have to accept between men and women. Of course, there's lots of crossovers, and we share lots of other similar features. But one is men are more warlike than women. I know there are Amazonian women tribes, you know, not to diminish women warriors, but the majority of people in the battlefield are men. And that's part of our history, too much testosterone perhaps. But we go out, we get injured, we come back, and the women are the natural healers. And when you add these mushrooms into stews or soups, because of the antimicrobial properties, they extend the shelf life. And so it would be natural, I think, for women to have a lot more knowledge of the use of medicinal mushrooms than the men, because the women were involved much more so in actually physically healing wounded soldiers or wounded individuals. I just think it goes in parallel with food making and food consumption. So I know times have changed, of course, but from our evolutionary history, I think it's there's a preponderance of evidence that men were involved more so in warlike activities than women.
We'll take that. So just not to belabor, but any of the host defense capsule subscription 12 units, meaning if people pledge for that, because you're offering one, and it normally costs quite a lot of money, So people, 12 units get sent something per month, is that?
Yeah, and I take 2 to 4 per day, and when I'm stressed, and it's hard not to be stressed in these days, then when your immune system is challenged, then I want to fortify my immune system more, so I personally consume more of them under stressful times or when I'm exposed to vectors of disease.
And capsules are just as good as liquid?
Excellent question, Carolyn, and no, they're actually, even they come from similar species. One needs to bear in mind that the mycelium is only one cell wall thick, and yet the largest organism in the world is a mycelial mat in eastern Oregon, 2,200 acres in size, one cell wall thick, surrounded by literally hundreds of millions of microbes per gram trying to consume these thin-like fibers that only have one cell wall of protection. We have 5 or 6 skin cells that protect us from infection, and yet the largest organism in the world is mycelial mat, over 2,000 acres in size. How do these fungi do that? They do that because they orchestrate a very, very sophisticated defense mechanism of being able to prevent microbes from consuming them. And most of our beneficial antibiotics have come from fungi against bacteria. We're more closely related to fungi, so we benefit from those defenses. Most listeners may not realize that many of the microbial pathogens that afflict us also afflict mushrooms, E. coli, Staph, Streptococcus, etc. And so their natural defenses against these bacterial parasites also we can benefit from. But very few antifungal antibiotics are non-toxic to humans because of our close evolutionary relationship. This also relates to candida infections and why it's so hard to fight them as well as athlete's foot, is that the antifungal antibiotics tend to be very toxic to us. So the mycelial-based extracts benefit from the extracellular exudates, the form of sweat that exudes from the mycelium that protects the mycelium from being gobbled up by microbes. But when a mushroom is created, it's laminated mycelium, literally hundreds of cell of these the mycelial threads laminated on top of each other. And so they actually produce something that's quite different, because the mushroom fruit body, you know, has barriers of resistance of these cell walls that are now hundreds or thousands of cells thick versus one cell wall thick. So what happens when we are producing these, we have found that there's much stronger antimicrobial properties associated with a living mycelium than there is from the conch or from the mushroom itself. And so when we generate capsules, they have a much more immune benefit in enhancing your body's natural immune system and has antioxidant properties, but the extracts do that plus they give you the benefit of these antimicrobial compounds that we're very close to identifying what the molecular structures of these compounds are.
Way cool. Okay, and then we're getting to the end of our list. Paul's also offering one mycelium running limited edition. What is the limited edition?
I'm a book collector.
Great. Okay, that's what
I'm
that
a book collector, and so we created 100 copies of Mycelium Running, the second edition. They're numbered. It's a very nice collector's item, and they're all signed, and I think we're bound about 15 of them right now. So it's a very rare book, and anyway, any rare book collectors, this is the type of thing, you know, like we glom onto, because these books are, the rarer the book that you make ostensibly, you know, over time, maybe, they'll become more valuable. But I have a lot of rare books, and I buy every mushroom book out there, even people I don't necessarily fully respect. There'll be something in their books that'll be of interest, and so I have a vast library, and I have probably over 1,000 mushroom books and about 30 or 40 special editions, which I...
So even our late, great, eccentric ally, James Arthur, you have his book, possibly. Okay, never mind. Moving right along. Okay, so one of those books, limited edition, is available for a mysterious pledge, but you can find out about that by calling 1-800-439-5732. Only one of those. And then also we are offering the book, the ordinary but extraordinary Mycelium Running, How Mushrooms Can Help Save the World, by Paul Stamets, our great guest, and that is for also a mysterious pledge that they will tell you when you call, that we have a number of. All right, great. Yes, you are so densely informed. We met, I can't remember, several million years ago at one of the early pioneers. But it's been, I think one of the great things about now when we say, yes, the pressure and yes, apply everything we know, is that we do want to think about how many great teammates we have, you know, of which you are exemplary, who are so good at what they do. And you are such a good presenter. Ah! Anyway, bless you. For just a rogue question, what would the mushrooms advise for the debate tonight? How do we metabolize glamour?
Well, there's got to be a lot of decomposition.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Correct. Deconstruction.
Yes.
I'm a strong believer in evolution. My mother's a charismatic Christian, and so she gave birth to a flock of scientists, which is very interesting. But I had a waking dream, and I called my mother up saying, "Mother, I know how we can bring the creationists and the evolutionists together." And she goes, "Oh, what's that, son?" And I said, "I think evolution is God's intelligent design."
Yeah.
And my mother said, "Oh, that's a wonderful phrase." So I made it into a bumper sticker. I put it in my car. And somebody tried to tear it off. So I made 10 more. And then a Christian van going down Interstate 5 rolled down their windows and started heckling me.
Oh.
They're going to pray for me. And I'm looking, "Oh, why are these people heckling me?" And I realized, oh, it's my bumper sticker. Evolution is God's intelligent design. And I realized I just hit a sensor, a set of receptor sites that really disturbed people. So
you think they go, yay, good for you. I mean,
I would think they'd say cheers.
Yeah.
That's what most people say. Mm. That's a great phrase. It brings people together. And some of the, I think just these people who believe in creation theories just need to read more. And I think that this is a problem. I kind of sarcastically like to start the conversation. Well, let me just understand where you're coming from. Do you believe the Earth is flat, or do you believe we live on a sphere going through space? Now, a little bit insulting to say that, but I really want to know, is the Earth the center of the universe, or the center of our solar system, or is the sun? It reminds me of Galileo's times, and those type of arguments. And here we're coming to, we're in 2008, and people think the Earth started 10,000 years ago? Whoa. What books have they been reading? But
although if we were to switch from the male bull primate kind of like river, which is valuable of course, to the woman mushroom magic person, that there is a way to jump into that conversation, which your bumper sticker almost did, but still fueled by testosterone, because the more the more clearly there is an intelligent design at work. I mean,
I believe that nature does have an intelligent design, and I think that through the theater of evolution, there's been googles of experiments that have failed, some of which have succeeded, and nature builds upon its prior successes. And we're here today because we are an evolutionary success, maybe soon to be in doubt. But this is, what's happened in the past 3 years related, and just a few little kind of newsworthy items. 420 million years ago, there was an organism called Prototaxides.
Yeah.
And it was just published in the Journal of Geology by Dr. Kevin Boyce, who finally unveiled what this fossil was. It was first discovered in 1859. It's been found on 5 continents, back in the time of Pangaea. This actually, these continents were all joined together. And Prototaxides, laying down 420 million years ago, was 3 feet high. If it stood up, which we think it did, it was over 30 feet tall. Now, back at 420 million years ago, the tallest plants were not more than about 2 feet tall. So laying down, the tallest organism on Earth, laying down was Prototaxides at 3 feet, and if it was standing up at 30 feet, it was way over any other plant or any other organism. And now we know that Prototaxides was a giant fungus. Across the landscapes of Earth were these huge, giant fungi towering over all plants. Fungi came to land first about 1.3 billion years ago, and then plants followed several hundred million years later. But who knew that if you went back 420 million years ago, you wouldn't see trees, you wouldn't see angiosperms, you'd be seeing basically small, short plants with these towering fungi, which no doubt would have attracted lightning. And all that mysticism kind of sort of comes out. So that's one of the things that we just
learned. And what did Prototaxides do we think? I mean, what were its properties that it was so needed so early, so high?
I mean, that's a total mystery.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's also
so
like,
cool.
Well, remember also when we were journeying with our fabulous Eclipse team through Turkey in the mysterious mountain ranges that looked like giant mushrooms. Wait, where was that? Do you remember? Anyway, we went into the Catholic cave shrines, and there were pictures of mushrooms everywhere.
And I was the first person out of it, maybe tens of thousands, who noticed that there are mushroom pictographs everywhere, all over inside these caves and temples.
And actually, psilocybe mushrooms. I mean, those retreat monks were having a more fun time, really. I mean, I could go for that, you know, secluded, monastic, you know, psilocybin-enhanced ruminations in a landscape that looks like giant mushrooms. Anyway, so, yes, there's all those things. But, yeah, so deconstruction, evolution. Because one of the things that I love most about when you were on the show some years back, and we were talking about the metabolizing of radioactivity, and at that point, and you might want to update us, you know, and you brought in Chernobyl, but you said nothing can metabolize radioactivity, they can store it, and then you said, but the little guys are working on it.
Yeah, and this is something that scientists at Einstein University back in New York were watching a video of the inside of Chernobyl, inside the reactor building, which is highly radioactive, and they're astonished to see on the cement walls all these black molds growing. And so they did some research saying, how in the world can these molds survive under a million rads of radiation? One rad is a hundredth of a joule per kilogram. It's a massive amount of radiation that would kill most all life forms, and these fungi were thriving. And they found that these fungi are producing melanin, which is the same substance that's on our skin that makes our skin become dark upon exposure to sunlight, or UV. And they discovered that these fungi were using radioactivity from Chernobyl's reactor as a fuel source and biologically converting it in order to metabolize and gobble up the cement. Now, this is heretofore undiscovered, and so science, we just discovered now that fungi can use radiation in a fashion similar to that plants can use light. And so this has enormous implications about the possibility of life on other planets, in terms of space travel for growing fungal foods, because we can use the radiation of space as an energy source for that, or even the reactors that are powering the spacecrafts. So there's now a new convertible energy source that can convert physical energy, gamma radiation, into cellular food energy that humans then can consume. So these little tiny discoveries have huge implications. Another discovery that we didn't know anything about, in fact, several mycologists, even those in California, were told of this, and they were extremely skeptical, as I was, but there's this scientist by the name of, hydrologist by the name of Robert Coffin, and Robert Coffin, Jonathan Frank, and Darlene Southworth are publishing a paper on the first underwater mushroom, the first, actually, underwater gilled mushroom. And they were in the Rogue River, Robert was, and he was measuring current flow and the ecosystem dynamics. And he looked down, and he was wading in the river up to his knees. He couldn't believe what he saw. And then they've gone back now 3 years. They found hundreds of this little mushroom called Saffrella aquatica, known probe. I say known probe because the name is being reserved. According to international rules of nomenclature.
This is Robert Coffin, like box you put dead people in. That spelling or a different?
Actually, no, it's C-O-F-F-A-N, but close.
Okay. We want to be searching this guy, absolutely.
So he's ruined my fly fishing forever, because now when I go into the rivers and I'm going to be looking for underwater mushrooms, but who knew? No one had made this discovery before. They were met with great skepticism, which is the best discoveries are always met with scientific skepticism. And now they sent me specimens. I got it into culture. This is important. I got it into culture because it's so rare. And now the Rogue River is becoming silted because of logging and other events, and it could destroy its habitat. But being able to get this thing into culture is extremely important.
Yes, and we are lucky that the mushroom sent you.
Getting strains and preserving strains, I think, is essential for human health and habitat health. And one of our main goals here is to sequester as many strains of fungi from endangered ecosystems as possible, because we may discover, you know, not in the too distant future, that they could save millions of lives. And this is something that we really need to focus on.
And back to the black mold growing in Chernobyl and the buildings using radioactivity to metabolize. So they could eat the cement. Are they metabolizing the radioactivity? Meaning, are they diminishing radioactivity, or is it?
The subsequent studies now, because there's been lots of discussions about what's actually happening to the radioactivity. You know, there's a half-life that doesn't go away, but when you radiate other metals, they become also radioactive. And hypothetically, this is not yet proven because the research has not been finalized yet, is that they are able to use it doesn't hit, the fungi become irradiated. But they then use the radiation as a fuel source, and so there's a net diminishing of radiation over time. We don't know what those trend lines are.
Right. So, just for the fun of it. Okay, Gwen Ifill broke her ankle. What would we telepathically wish her from the Mushroom Realm for lucidity and breaking ankle and just her mythic role in general?
What?
I'm just back to, you can throw this into the mushroom compost pile if you want, but I'm just back to the kind of metaphor also of the VP debate, and you're having a party tonight. You know, so what would you wish for somebody who'd broken their ankle? I mean, is mushroom useful for, you know, kind of, toning up? No. This doesn't matter. Alright, we'll move right along. Moving right along. Okay, but you were saying deconstruction, evolution, revelation. Because, yeah, you have this great quote really on page one. Fungi are the interface organisms between life and death. You know, and without fungi, all ecosystems would fail. So this crucial, the interface organism between life and death. We've got Scorpio planets abounding right now, which is the art form of absolutely mediating between life and death and backstage and on stage. The interface organism between life and death, just say a little more about that.
Well, these fungi generate soils, and the loss of soils around the world through pollution in terms of soil health, and then through erosion and or through human habitation. Those are three threats to the soil biosphere. And, you know, soil give rise to plants, and plants give us oxygen and food and feed insects and herbivores, and we're part of that whole food chain. And once we lose these soils, then lots of things happen that most people may not realize, and that is, you know, healthy soil leads to biodiversity and to equilibrium. And as these insults are inflicted upon the soil biosphere, then an upset that natural equilibrium, and then you can have disease organisms, organisms which we wouldn't think would be diseases, but then become diseases because they leap out of the landscape, and it's representative of the fact that landscape is suddenly changing very, very quickly. And these fungi can adapt very, very quickly to catastrophe, and so they're very, very good at that. However, if we lose too many of those candidate fungal species, then we lose the ability of our response mechanisms to heal these ecosystems. There's a real big concern I have, and virtually no one has talked about it, and that is, well, not only fungi sequester carbon dioxide, it's counterintuitive, but soil, as it's become thicker, is a bigger carbon bank. So by investing in soils, we actually sequester carbon dioxide, and that gives rise to more plants, and that cycle is renewed and much stronger. But with climate change and global warming, we have several really huge issues, and one of the ones that virtually no one has talked about is that as the permafrost thaws in the Arctic, and there was in 2005, a group of scientists went from Mount Sinai School of Medicine and the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, found frozen bodies in the Arctic in Alaska, and they were able to re-isolate the 1918 flu pandemic virus. Well, as the permafrost is thawed, you know, where most of us, after 1968, we have no immunization against smallpox, the 1918 flu pandemic virus could be released from thawing cadavers, from shipmates that were frozen, and then as you start drilling in the Arctic, you create transportation systems. What are transportation systems? They're vectors of distribution. And our lessons from Cambodia and the spread of viruses and diseases there, when the highways were built, then directly along the pathway of the highways, diseases were spread.
Ebola as well, yeah?
And so, yeah, Ebola is a perfect example of that. And so this is something that I personally am concerned for, especially for First Peoples up in the Arctic zone, as the permafrost is warmed and as these highways are being constructed. The ecosystem is going to be rapidly changing. And the lesson of history is when the ecosystems change, then you have organisms and the viruses leaping out of the landscape. And if there's a convenient vehicle, i.e. a truck, a human, you know, a dog, a cat, a bird, then these vectors can spread diseases into our temperate forests. And so, into our temperate landscapes. And there will be a CO2 burst also as the permafrost thaws, because the fungi will wake up and there's a lot of frozen dead organic material that'll then be metabolized. And so as the carbon dioxide levels rise throughout the world, large mammals are going to increasingly suffer. The fungi will actually do quite well, but we are really talking about the possibility of human extinction. And even though we have an economic crisis, we really have a much larger crisis, and it's an ecological crisis. and unless we join in union with our natural allies and understand that nature of which we are a part is something that we can utilize to help our progeny, our own children, and to help the ecosystems, then we're really going to, we're committing ecological suicide. And this is something that I think our descendants, I fear hearing them in my dreams, literally screaming back to us in time, asking us to wake up. Listen, don't you see, don't you hear? This is not about your 401k plan.
Right.
This is much more long-term of investment in the health of this entire planet. And the people who take a very provincial view, unfortunately, are sabotaging the very future that we need to guarantee.
So, yeah, so presumably when you see the Republicans saying, we must drill, you know, I mean, it gives all of us, they're like, but I hadn't heard this crucial part that you just presented to, highways are vectors of disease and the melting of the permafrost. You know, we had heard about the CO2 burst that's becoming more well known, but ooh, this is really, really crucial. So again, appealing to, you know, yes, human self-interest is therefore eco self-interest is a crucial part of your ministry. And we are so delighted that you are increasingly influential at this time where we want to, yes, apply Pluto death rebirth in Capricorn soon, back again, you know, applying. So you're really, you know, collaborating on this crucial leading edge. Thank you.
It's so much not me. It's so much of a whole milieu, a whole group of people and organisms, I think, are all calling out. And
yeah.
I'm just one of the people leading the charge, but there's many other people out there that are certainly even better qualified than myself and who in their own areas of expertise, you know, are doing their job. I think we all need to join together. And the wonderful thing about the Internet is that we do have a collective voice that and we have satellites. So I like satellites, and I like the Internet, and it spreads information. And this is, I believe, the invention of the computer Internet is an inevitable consequence of a previously proven evolutionary successful model, and that is of the mushroom mycelium. The mushroom mycelium has the same archetype, this network of cells that responds to and survives from catastrophia. And I presented this idea, but in 1994, a lot of people scoffed at me, and some of my critics said I was eating too many magic mushrooms, which is probably true.
No, not enough. Yeah, okay.
But then now there's four articles that have come out out of Oxford University, out of Edinburgh, Fricker et al. 2007, Weber et al. 2008, now talking about the mathematics, the organization of mycelial networks, and how it's been optimized according to Internet theory to have the most, the maximum nodes of crossing. These are hop points in Internet computer language. And it allows for the information and nutritional flow to continue through devastation events. And so these articles now are, I'm really honored and delighted to see, because it truly supports the fact that nature has already designed resilient networks, and we can use those examples for in helping us better move traffic around, move information around, build computer networks, etc.
Fabulous. Well, I'm going to reluctantly let you go because I must get back to pledging on our particular network so that we can keep these important voices of our team convening, you know, alive. But bless your heart. Give my regards to your most beautiful partner and your wonderful pack and all the mushrooms there and the dogs, and I will see you at Bioneers.
Great. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.
Take care.